Hello and welcome to Real World HR, the podcast which is putting human back into HR. I'm Louise Kennedy, HR expert, chartered CIPD professional and founder of award-winning HR consultancy Oculus HR. In the Real World HR podcast, we focus on people and business, telling the stories that we've learned from and explaining the processes which have supported the solutions. This episode features Emma Chandler. Emma is an award-winning leadership coach, inspirational speaker and author. She's passionate about developing people, changing the face of leadership and creating inclusive working communities with the goal of improving wellness, wisdom and winning at work. In 2018, Emma founded her business, HR and Leadership Consultancy, Choose to Grow. Choose to Grow are resilient experts providing executive coaching services and learning and developing interventions to organisations. Emma created the Pivot Leadership Programme, a unique leadership model which gives organisations a proven framework for leading management and change. Ready to step into the real world of HR? So thank you very much, Emma, for agreeing to come along onto our podcast today. Obviously, this is my thing. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation around, you know, the leadership element of what it is that you do and kind of how that impacts from a HR model as well. So probably perfectly, obviously I've done a little intro into you. Do you want to give me a little bit kind of overview of you and why you are where you are and how you got to where you are now?
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, so that's the winding path lead to the best places, right, I suppose. So
yes, it does indeed.
I'm a leadership coach now with like a real kind of specific interest in how we use neuroscience to modify leadership behaviours in the workplace so we can increase the employee value proposition. So really thinking about the science behind behaviours and things like that in the workplace and how leaders contribute to that. But my actual kind of entry into this was windy. So, you know, my entry level job was serving ice creams in a seaside town. Then I went on to study equine sports science at university. So I wanted to learn about my passion. Yeah. So didn't end up in the leisure or tourism industry. Stepped out of that and wanted to follow my passion, which was I've always loved horses. So that was my hobby growing up and something I was really passionate about. And interestingly, now it's like my story behind the story. So everything I learned on that around equine behavior and the psychology side of things actually really links into the neuroscience about flight and fight and how that plays out in the workplace. So I didn't know I was going to end up doing workplace training, but actually that had a really big influence over where I am. It has a big influence over where I am today. But in the middle, I kind of went into the corporate world. I didn't follow a career in the equine industry because quickly realized it was too tough and it wasn't for me. Those cold mornings and the wet days were like, no, I'm not doing this forever. I want to go and work in an office.
you need to keep that as a hobby.
Yeah. So I think, like, you know, people and ponies has just always been my thing. So I thought I'm going to go and work with people. So I explored a career in housing, started off in social housing in an entry-level role. Even though I had my degree, I was like taking a step back to learn new skills and kind of started to work with people in a landlord function. Quickly, I had a long career there, 15 years, worked my way up all the way up through organizations and moved around organizations, ended up in leadership roles with an interest in change and new service design. So that's kind of just where my passions went to and obviously my skill set. And then I stepped out, took a punt. Decided I didn't want to do that anymore because that was my resilience was being tested with new service design and managing change all the time. And I was experiencing some challenges around fatigue. So I decided to take a year out. I went to get my CIPD and went into leadership development because I felt that I could contribute to support leaders who felt what I was feeling when I was in corporates. And I wanted to make a big change around that lived experience at work and enhance that.
Okay, so you kind of took from the why or how you felt at that time and kind of thought actually you could make a difference within to other people within corporate businesses to be able to make change, really.
It was actually a development program that I went on that kind of brought that out of me, if you like. You know, I didn't realize when I went on to a development program to think about how I could lead my teams more effectively, and actually came out of that with a moment of I really want to follow my purpose and passion here, which is about making that contribution back. Yeah.
Yeah. So how does it feel that you've been doing that since 2018, so 6 years now. So how does that feel now you're in it and you're doing it? Have you still got the drive and the passion that you had before for
it? I have actually. Yeah. I mean, it's constantly evolving. So that keeps me interested and having the autonomy around my own business and what that brings for me and the value that brings to me is huge. But yeah, I don't, this space that I'm in now is constantly evolving and I'm constantly having to develop my own skill set to be able to keep up and be effective at what I do. And that seems to be really appealing to the neuroscience around the novelty that the brain enjoys in the workplace. So I think it's really linked actually to probably what we're going to talk a bit more about today, about how we retain people and keep them engaged.
Yeah. So I'm really interested in kind of the neuroscience element of it and the emotional intelligence that comes with it. How does that play a big part in what it is that you're doing and delivering? Obviously, you've mentioned science and neuroscience a few times within your introduction there. What impact does that make, you know, when you're working with senior leaders within a business? So what impact would you get from it and kind of what exchanges can you have because of the science?
Yeah, so I think traditionally when I first started, when I was developed in leadership and then when I first started to deliver leadership and coaching, we had a really big focus on personality profiling and how that could help us. So understanding, you know, the psychology behind what we're all about and what is really strong through our values and how we need to behave to appeal to those values so we can all get along and collaborate. And that stuff is still hugely powerful. You know, we still use that as like a foundational entry to building skills and that emotional intelligence. But then as I started to explore my practice, what I was finding was that didn't really help with dips in resilience. So understanding, you know, why really talented people in the workforce were hitting struggles at some point in their career where they couldn't really adapt and overcome and optimize themselves and sustain themselves, even though they knew all of this psychology around personalities and how to get the best from each other, it still wasn't really happening. So I then went on to develop more of my knowledge around that and understanding how the brain operates in an environment and how resilience plays out in that dynamic. And then I started to bring that into my leadership coaching practice. So right, really understanding kind of what's going on for the individual in that environment.
And would you say that when you go into do leadership coaching, you are already considering the culture that's there? Do the companies that you go into already establish what their culture is? And then they're kind of trying to enhance the leadership model, you know, kind of the people that are in there and kind of leading the business? Because I know you mentioned the psychology and then the impact upon the values that was there. So does the culture play a big part in the leadership element of the training that you're delivering as well?
Absolutely. But when I go into work with organisations, they'll talk to me about their culture and then they've got a set of behaviours that they'd like to achieve through their leadership to bring those, the culture alive or bring the behaviours in the organisation alive and have the skills to be able to do that. But I will talk to them about actually kind of working within that, because when we create cultures and behaviours, what we're asking humans to do is sign up to a dictated way of behaving, really. You can come and bring your personality to it, but actually you need to work in this way. And what we know about the science is that the brain doesn't really enjoy that. And we're now starting, you know, you're starting to hear more in blogs and on social media about bringing your whole self to work and being okay with that and having your own identity within that. So I am now starting to talk to organizations about, I understand your culture, what you're trying to achieve, but we really need to be thinking about involvement and a community here if you're going to attract the right people. So it's a, I think we're in a state of shift with that actually it isn't just about getting people to sign up to these cultures, skills and behaviors. It's actually about if we're going to get the best people to come into our organization, embracing their individuality within that and allowing them to do that within the community that we're creating at work, which is, you know, a bit of a mindset shift really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think from the experience that we're having is that a lot of companies don't really even know what their cultures are to start with.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so a lot of the smaller businesses that we deal with certainly are kind of struggling to establish, you know, they'll be quite happy to say, oh yeah, we've got a great culture, but actually they don't know what that is. So we've kind of like tried to work with the leadership teams that are in there to be able to enable them to develop what the culture is based upon the skill sets of the leaders that are within the business and kind of how they want it to be able to generate, to be able to move forward as well. And then thinking about the leadership team, kind of really from the point that you're doing, thinking about that leadership team and kind of actually how can they develop further to enable the behaviours to suit, to work with them. And I think that's a really interesting point you said about bringing the whole self to work and being individual. What impact do you think that makes upon the business when you have, because obviously everybody's different and you don't expect people to be kind of robots and coming in and everyone conforms and behaves in exactly the same type of way. Obviously you've done some reading around that. What impact do you think it makes by bringing your whole self to work and kind of the difference that can make?
Mm. Well, from my experience, what I'm seeing now, I'm talking more about this and working more with my clients about this, and they're embracing that, is that culture really drives behaviors, but communities drive behaviors too. So it's about understanding who's in that community and allowing that to be collaborative and innovate and be more creative. So that's where we're starting to see if we can embrace that, when then we start to create more stability. Because if we think about the generations coming through in the workforce now and what they want to get out of being at work, it's very different to what our generations and previous, you know. So it's about understanding that community that's coming in, or what we want to create as the community, rather than these are the rules. I'm trying to kind of work within that space. And the reason for that is because the brain likes clarity. It likes options. It likes their reputation to be protected, and it likes equity. So when we start to bring culture into the dynamic of the environment for people to be resilient, we start to knock off particularly the reputation and equity of diverse people coming into the workforce now. But that diversity creates great talent. We know that. So we're working against ourselves. So it's about really thinking about how we get that right, I think, to set the tone for then future development.
I suppose when you're thinking about from a cultural point of view, and then you're talking about community, if a culture could flex us kind of around the behaviours that are there, because obviously ultimately, you know, you need to be able to flex, to be able to bring different people in, to be able to add different contributions to the organisation, which are different behaviours, different diversities, and that kind of moulds in together, doesn't it? I think I was just thinking of the word kind of culture, but I understand where you're coming from with kind of actually calling them communities, because both of them drive behaviour, don't they? And the behaviours are kind of what then develops back into the business element of it.
Yeah.
So it all kind of fits in very nicely together around that area.
It just kind of creates a different perspective, doesn't it? And if you think about the leadership that comes from a culture versus a community, it just has a different feel, I think, and will appeal to those coming through for the future. So, you know, we're talking about future-proofing, aren't we, our organisations? But when you talked about organisations that you work with, they say, oh, I don't really know what our culture is. That excites me, because I'm like, well, do we have to have one? You know, do we have to go there? I guess we need identity, but... You know,
I know. And actually, some of the businesses that we deal with, they do need to define what the culture is, because actually then they're uncertain about who they bring into the business. They're uncertain about kind of the succession plan that they've got, the recruitment strategies that they've got. They don't put any kind of, you know, branding out there from who they are from a business point of view. You know, obviously, lots of people are struggling with the recruitment element of it now. So actually, we're trying to say, well, you need to have something out in the public domain, whether it's about personal aspects of it or just to have some engagement out there to enable people to be attracted to the workplace, to feed them to apply for a job. So one of our clients has got 200 employees. They've got no, you know, employee branding out there. They've got nothing about kind of what it's like to work within the business. There's nothing out there. So actually when they're struggling to attract talent to come in, and they need that higher level leadership and middle management talent to come in, but there's no knowledge out there. So that's what we're trying to say. Well, actually, you need to put something out to be able to get something back. And whether that's kind of around promoting diversity but in essence, kind of, I suppose I'm probably including that community element of what you're talking about in with the culture. So it's kind of a broader skill set, or kind of a broader, you know, behaviours that they would want within the business side of things. So it's an interesting kind of conversation around cultural communities, behaviours, diversity. It all pans in together though, doesn't it? And I think that's why I kind of like the emotional intelligence part of it, because actually people are as they are, but actually, you know, sometimes emotional intelligence can kind of really highlight to us, you know, how people manage themselves and then manage situations, and kind of the impact that that can make longer term within a business, because they've actually got the skill set to enable them to help themselves, help the business, and to be able to help the employees within the business as well, and makes a significant impact.
Yeah.
Would you say that does have an impact upon kind of behavioural element of it as well?
Yeah.
Or is it not really an area you get too much in?
Yeah, no, I try to get into as many areas as I can when I'm delivering a program, because the more exposure I have, the better I can be at, you know, making whatever we're working towards a reality in the training room, if you like. So yeah, no, I am interested in all of that. I think just going back to your point about we have to put something out there. I mean, you definitely do, because that's the clarity piece that the brain needs, isn't it, to be attracted to come. And even if it's a community and we're open and we've got the options and the equity and the reputation, we're protecting the reputation, that's fine. But, I think we can't be woolly and say we don't know what we're about completely. So definitely. And then just coming back to that piece around how this all impacts on the development side of things. The options piece around what the brain needs is that career development pathway that you're talking about. You know, so first of all, it's, oh, I'm attracted to work here because of what this community might look like. I want to be part of it. Then it's, oh, but when I get there, what will my options be? And that's your career development pathway and the skills and things, you know, you say with the type of leadership we're looking for. And then, or if you want to develop on this path, this is what it would look like. And then, you know, the environmental stuff around the reputation and equity comes in when they're there, that lived experience, isn't it? So,
yeah. Really interesting. And do you do like a profiling as well? Do you kind of do a behavioural profiling as part of your leadership programme?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of weapons of choice there with the personality profiling, depending on clients. I always work from a place of strength. So if they're already using something that works, we'll build on that. I'm not a real fan of changing that, you know, coming in with my thinking that I've got something better. I mean, there's great tools out there that are being used. We just build on that. But we do have them on offer if our client's starting from scratch. But we also then support that with a resilience tool. So we've got a tool that is the work of Catherine McEwen, who I'm accredited to. She's an Australian business psychologist, and her work is well-founded and been published in over 100 occupational health journals. So she's pretty well-researched. And I absolutely love her work. And we can use those at entry-level or in a development space with the accreditation to coach and support with that. And it really looks at how individuals are, where they're prioritizing their energy to build their resilience. So it's, you know, we want the skills development, you know, the technical skills, but we also need a workforce who can look after themselves and their energy and use it at the right times and regulate that too.
Right, okay. So having the likes of that accreditation, that's obviously helped to be able to develop the tools that go there and complemented by if there's a personality profile that's been used there. But then you've developed your own leadership framework. Do you want to explain what that is and how you came up with it and obviously the background behind it as well?
Yeah, okay. So building on the resilience accreditation, we went into COVID. So whenever there's turbulence, there's innovation, isn't there? You know, I was looking at when we were all sort of working from home, and I was thinking about what do leaders really need right now to be able to still keep their workforce engaged, you know, bust kind of corporate isolation and use their emotional intelligence online. So we diversified, did everything online, kept everything going, actually all the programs that we had. But I was starting to see some patterns in the competencies that were required then. And then I was quickly getting back into what will the future of work look like when we all come back and it's hybrid. So out of that kind of disruption, you know, the biggest disruption we've had to the workplace, I would say, in changing our behaviours and how we work, the pivot model soon kind of evolved, because that was, you know, trying to encourage leaders at that time to think, to pivot in a scenario in leadership isn't about just the end of a disruption process and we think, oh, crikey, we better pivot. It's not a crisis. It's actually just embracing that it's the next leg of the change journey. You know, we need to now move forward with something else as a result of what's going on in the environment and support people to be resilient within that. So I was bringing a lot of my like previous work into it, but actually just putting it in a real clear framework and then pitching it in as this is what's required now going forward. And it's really just kind of taken off. So it's got a suite of 5 principles. So they are perseverance, inclusion, value, optimization, and trust. And leaders go through the program in that systematic way to cover those competencies. And then it supports them to win at change. So helping people with their wellness and resilience through their brain health in a change period, helping them develop the wisdom and skills they need to be great leaders, using that emotional intelligence and the neuroscience to support them. And then driving up that aptitude to win at work, because we often feel like we don't win at work because it's so hectic and manic and, you know, everyone's sort of firefighting really. So it creates that space to step back from that and think about, you know, how do we win here? What are we going to do with the mindset to win?
Yeah. And so you kind of split that down over a day or two, do you, when you're going through, or obviously depending upon what the client really wants, is it?
Yeah, no, it's the content within it is probably 5-day full days, if you like, but we do split it down depending on what clients can, you know, how they can allocate their people the time to develop. And we do a mixture of online or in the classroom to deliver that. But it's also broken up with other elements of learning. So it comes with a online portal so people can learn and recap when they want. So, you know, I'm trying to break down all the barriers around learning, because another thing that we learned when we went through the pandemic process was that people actually in organizations want to learn in their own time. They don't necessarily all want to get in a classroom and learn on the time that we dictate that. So that kind of works with the neuroscience, if you think about it, you know, given that autonomy and options. So what we do is we always have a classroom intervention, but we have a platform to support that for other learners who want to learn in a different way. And that's me facilitating online. So it's not e-learning. It's actually me creating videos and then setting up activities for them to do. They can talk to each other on that platform. It's very collaborative. They can get direct access to me where I can coach and support in the moment when required. So it's really inclusive and engaging. But then we also have booster sessions in between the sessions. So for those people who were in the room when all the content was kind of floating around and working with them, that they can come into an online session with me, like a group coaching session, if they want, which is optional, and they can either unpack content they might not have understood in the classroom or bring real life scenarios then from the workplace to the content. And I coach and support them to do that as well. So it's quite a robust learning experience.
Yeah, it's kind of all encompassing, isn't it? Kind of giving people the different options, but also, as you say, kind of being on site or being online as well. So that's really, really interesting way of being able to do it. One of the things that you talked about there was around wellness and resilience. How does that play out? I, again, love the area around from a wellness and the impact that it can make upon businesses. How does that play out within the framework that you deliver?
Yeah, so the golden thread is that on each competency, we are studying elements of neuroscience. So making sure that we are working with the threat and reward response in the right way when we're leading, and actually taking ownership that the leader is the environment within the landscape and people come into work, and how we think, behave and act has a big impact on people's resilience. So that's a theme, but it's then looking at the competencies and linking them back to, it's all about the brain health element. So in perseverance, we talk about no resilience, you can't persevere. So we go right at the beginning of the program, understanding the dynamics of resilience and the things that we need to be doing to look after ourselves, but then also how we coach that and help our teams to do that in times of stress. So that's the kind of principle there. But then when we go into inclusion, we're looking at how we make sure that we are working in a way that we are not working from an unconscious bias place, or that we're leveling and calling unhelpful behaviors in the workplace that might be risking our community, you know, that sense of community at work. So again, neuroscience in there around, none of us are immune to bias. We can all have that. So how we understand that, how the brain works and why it's happening, but then teaching leaders to work with that in the moment. When we go into value, we're really focusing on those kind of limbic hijacks that happen around us, sharing our value or coming up with value creation, or maybe pitching and selling or whatever our role is, whatever our type of leadership role is. And it's the mind management around that. So, you know, having a growth mindset, making sure we've got the abundance mindset and the collaboration mindset. So we've got that fundamental value creation mindset when we're coming to work. So again, that's linked to the neuro. When we go into optimize, then we step into how we coach using neuroscience. So making sure that we're using a grit and grace approach, which is healthy and boosts well-being. So that'll be about challenging perspectives if they're unhealthy, or helping people reach their goals. But it might be we need to work with the prefrontal cortex because you're not in a threat space. We need more grit here. You know, we need to persevere. So we act in a way that stimulates that in the right way and it's healthy. Or if people are, you know, tipping into the burnout space, it's about giving them the grace and working with the limbic system to calm that in a coaching way and support them and help them overcome that so they can renew their energy and that they can sustain themselves. So that's the neuroscience element there. And then finally, in trust, we look at the logic response and the logic wobbles that happen in organizations when trust is broken and why the brain does that and how we communicate in a way that's much more clearer and that reduces the trust wobbles happening. So each one has a neuro thread, and they all impact then on the well-being of individuals and creating the right, if you like, physiology. So back to the science, for people to feel great at work.
Yeah. And it is targeted for, kind of, one of the better word is, from a leadership management point of view, it's about kind of trying to bring and develop your people to be able to have all of this in place. Is that right? Kind of, yeah. that level within the organization.
Yeah. And we've done this at entry level and at senior leader level. I mean, it's really optimized sort of middle manager up to senior level. We've got a great aspiring leaders program that gives the foundation with all that, the psychology behind leadership. You know, we're talking about the behavior profiling and that does all of that first. And then like the next level would be a pivot program. And then the neuroscience sits really nicely on top of that psychology baseline that we learn when we go on to leadership programs. And it's just like an enhanced level. It's like an enhanced level of leading, really, because we're using the science to support us.
Yeah. And I think, obviously, as you say, the science being underpinning and kind of running through everything that you're doing is very evident in the way that you've set that framework up, isn't it? So I think that that makes a significant difference. And it's that buy-in from the leaders within the business that actually this is going to make an impact to them, but also that wider, actually, if it impacts them, it impacts upon the business and the way that it's managing through there as well. Why do you think leaders need to pivot from like changing policies to changing minds? Why do you think there's kind of that differential between the two?
Well, you know, I love a great policy and a process because I'm not really process driven. So like it does help me with clarity. But we, you know, whenever we see sort of problems in the workplace, we tend to focus on, you know, how do we fix this from a process situation? And what I will always say is, you know, in performance management, I'm always encouraging the leaders that I work with to really think about the person and the resilience first before performance, because when we recruited them and they had all these great attributes that we were really attracted to, they were attracted to us. We bring people into our work environment or our community, and then we start to experience issues around performance or problems, or change happens and people don't cope so well. We often go to policy first to try and make that, and we should have done this differently. Let's change the policy in the way that we do it in a systematic way. And I'm trying to encourage organizations to think, let's get back to the people first. Let's think about the minds that we're working with and the environment that we've created, and try and challenge that to make that right for individuals, because they were great when we attracted them, right? And now we think we've got a problem. But actually, I really do believe in my core that if we focus on resilience first, performance second, and process after that, then we can really go somewhere with the talent that we've attracted.
Yeah, and it is a very fine line, isn't it? Because obviously we deal with policy, process, standards, expectations every day with regard to it. And there's so many businesses that actually need that structure in place because they don't have any structure. And actually when situations come up, they need to be able to have something to be able to fall back on, or a process certainly to be able to lead through. So we say performance management, we would always do something kind of informally first, you know, to speak to the individual about what they need, they want, the support, you know, what concerns they've got within the business before a structured process takes place. I suppose just reframed around what it is that you're talking about. And I think in essence that sometimes some businesses are so frustrated they need something, you know, from a procedural point of view to be able to follow through, isn't it? So it's a fine line of kind of actually, a perfect example, years ago we had a guy that said, no, I don't want any policies, I don't want anything in place. And then he took all of his staff on holiday, and there was 25 of them, and they all went to Mallorca for about 5 days. I'm laughing because obviously then there was a sexual harassment case came up, and obviously, you know, he's got people that are then being sent home, and, you know, he's on flights, and he's like, what am I going to do? I says, well, we've got no structured policy in place for harassment, you know, we need to... And he says, I can't have somebody working like that within the business. So it's then kind of like jumped into, you know, there's a fine line between actually sometimes there needs to be something that's structured in place to enable the right things to happen at the right time as well. So it was, and we always kind of thought, you want the policy now, don't you?
I totally get that, yeah.
So it's kind of, it's that fine line, isn't it? That sometimes you need the structure in the company to enable, I suppose, the development of the people to happen. And as you say, kind of the options and the career development and things to happen and be successful, but having that underlying baseline structure that actually people know what's expected of them. You know, standards and expectations we talk about all the time is having that baseline in there as well, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, I do, like I said, you know, I need that certain level. I mean, I've gone into deliver development in an organisation before, quite a young organisation who didn't have a lot of processes. And I was struggling in the training room to kind of get the groups to identify themselves within the corporate vision and where we were going. So you need that, don't you? You need a playing field.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose they can build from.
Yeah, you need the playing field, and everyone needs to know their part in that team, you know, and the area of the court or the pitch that they're on, and where they need to be at their best. So I definitely agree with that. But I think, you know, leaders really need to kind of step up here in organizations and think about the minds that they're working with and how they get the best from them, because that's what a sports coach would do, right? You know, a sports coach would say, this is your quarter. Now, when all these kind of things happen, I want you to think about how you would adapt and overcome that. How would you adapt and overcome that? It's not about sticking to the rules, because we need to create the options for people, for the brain to enjoy that. Remember, they need to think about their own solutions to problems. They need their equity and reputation protected in that area. So it's about how using that analogy really to challenge the minds of people in their work communities, not having rules in the work communities that stifle that. So that, that was my kind of thinking around that. But I'm very scopey in, and the way I think about things, I just get, when I go into organizations, I just feel like I see the path and this is what I end up coming up with. And then the science kind of supports me to understand that a bit better, really.
Yeah, and I think it's just got such a big part of it. You know, the more and more we did in emotional intelligence around neuroscience, it'll be within this series of podcasts. But that was really interesting as well, because actually that was a fundamental support and part of how the emotional intelligence works within the workplace because of the underpinning of the neuroscience as well. So obviously, when you go into a business, you are working with them and you do the leadership framework. And as you say, it's the time split down over a longer period of time. One of the important points of doing any type of training really is the reflection back on it and looking at the impact and the results that's come from it. How long would you leave it before, during that reflection period? And then what impact would you expect from the organisation once the managers or leaders have undergone this framework?
Yeah, so the framework that we put in place to evaluate is that after just two modules, we're already in asking about the learner experience, you know, and how we can, as a provider, adapt our style or change anything as part of the project to enhance that. But before, when they all come onto the program, they have the opportunity to complete the Pivot Scorecard, which gives them a baseline of how pivot they are at the moment, if you like, when they first start. So it asks questions, a series of questions about how the managers are currently leading, you know, building from a place of strength in the five areas. And it just asks them, what are they doing these things? And it's a simple yes or no kind of diagnostic, but it gives, pumps out a PDF that basically gives some quick hints and tips on how they can be more effective in these five principles and put their energy into that. So they're prioritizing that, because more often than not, we're just using our energy in the wrong place in leadership if things are going wrong or a bit funky. So we just need a realignment. So it kind of does that straight away. And then we evaluate at the end of the program, and then we ask them to take the scorecard again. So we can also do that distance traveled about how they've, the impact on those competencies and how they're now starting to demonstrate pivot principles and use neuroscience in their leadership. So what we've seen on that, it's a bit of a, you know, sliding scale, anything between 40 and 70% impact. And that was what we had to submit for me to be rated in the top 100 entrepreneurs with the Telegraph and NatWest, because I was talking about innovation in the corporate world and this leadership program that I was bringing in and the impact. So we used the scorecard data for me to be listed in the top 100 for that. So we're demonstrating really great impact actually on what can happen in the workplace once you've done a pivot program. But it also challenges these other bigger scopio impact objectives, which is, you know, understanding the employer promise, if you like, what your employer's asking you to come into this organization, what the leadership might look like. But then it also assesses what the actual lived experience is like and what people are telling us, because we use the data in the organization to support that. And then that, in that space, is like what I call the truth zone, where we put the pivot program in and build, you know, whilst it's a framework, the content that sits within that really targets your organization's specific needs to enhance that lived experience from what your people are telling us about the leadership and what type of leadership they would really enjoy. So we, that's where we kind of bespoke it, and we can have a really great impact then that's unique to the organization about what their goals and aims are. So one of the pivot programs I'm delivering at the moment, they, you know, they've got a big principle on, they want to be leaders that people want to follow, and they're using the pivot principles to help them support that. But within the classroom, their training objectives are very unique to them based on their sector they're working in and the people makeup and the diversity that they have. So we work to do that, so we can create, you know, individual impact there too.
Yeah, that's brilliant, isn't it? I think because that's the biggest point around the reflection on it and the, you know, kind of the impact that you can make. And ultimately, when a business is making that investment, there needs to be something that comes back from that point as well.
Yeah.
So what would be your biggest piece of advice you have to help leaders build inclusive communities?
Ooh, my biggest piece of advice would be to be humble within your own biased thinking, like understand that we are all human and that we all have a level of bias within us. So watch that doesn't play out in the decisions that we make or how that we lead or the opinions that we might have, because that's hugely detrimental to the community we want to create. I think understanding that resilience is a state, not a trait, is super important, and that we don't form a judgment on people in our community who might have a lower resilience and exclude them as a result of that and think that they're not good at their job when they really they are. It's just that they need a different style of leadership to be able to support them to boost their resilience so they can persevere and still be in the community and be included within that. But I think, you know, not being passive when we see behaviours that are harmful or weaken the community, we need to encourage and role model behaviours that strengthen the community, because the brain loves to mirror behaviours. So, you know, we need to check and challenge ourselves on that. You know, are we behaving in the right way that strengthens our community? And are we being brave enough to level and call unhelpful behaviours that risk our community in the moment when it happens, so we can educate people and bring them on a journey and still include them if it goes a bit wrong, but actually educate, you know, show them that that was unhelpful? Because usually what happens is if we don't get that check and challenge, then the brain just keeps doing the same thing with the same neural pathways. So we constantly need that check and challenge from our leadership to be able to keep on top of that. And that's what keeps a strong community that can keep moving forward. I think, yeah, those would be my tips.
Yeah, brilliant. And where can listeners find out more about you?
Oh, okay. So on my website, choosetogrow.co.uk, Instagram, Emma J. Chandler Leadership, and LinkedIn. I'm quite active on LinkedIn, so please look me up and ask me to connect or follow me. That would be great. But also the scorecard that I mentioned on my website is a free resource. So if you want to kind of, if you've got clients who want to think about how pivot they're being at the moment or get some pivot tips, they can complete the scorecard and get the PDF that helps them to bring some pivot thinking, actions and behaviours into their leadership rhythms now and start to boost their ability to pivot with their teams. And I've also got a Pivot Leadership podcast where I go into more detail on the pivot principles and invite guests in to talk about their perspective on each of the principles.
Okay, fantastic. So really appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to join us today. Obviously very busy in everything that you do. So thank you very much for coming along. We would obviously like to thank the listeners of the Real World HR podcast. And, you know, obviously we really appreciate that people spend the time, and it's been a really interesting topic around the leadership element of it for us as well. You can find more information about the things that we've discussed on this episode in the show notes that are below. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes, and please do leave us a rating and a review. The Real World HR, putting the human back into HR.